Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com.
This is the Tech Guy with Leo Laporte podcast. I'm Scott Wilkinson, filling in for Leo Laporte. This is episode 742, recorded Sunday, February 6th, 2011. Enjoy! Well, a good Super Bowl Sunday to everyone. This is the Tech Guy with Leo Laporte, except it's not Leo Laporte. I'm Scott Wilkinson, the home theater geek. Leo's on a cruise, lucky dog. And he's in the southern hemisphere, so he's probably doing pretty good. Of course, most of us in the northern hemisphere are under 5 feet of snow and ice, except for us in here in sunny Northern California, where it's February 6th and 70-something outside. Just great. Welcome to the show. Really appreciate you being here. As I said, I am Scott Wilkinson, the home theater geek, and so these shows are going to all be about home theater, which is my favorite subject, one of them anyway. And if you have a question about home theater, certainly about the big game and what to do with your big screen TV that you just pulled home yesterday or today even, you can give us a call at 888-88-ASK-LEO. That's 888-827-5536. But before we do that, I want to ask you, have you got your big screen TV set up? Did you go out yesterday and buy one, bring it home and put it in your home theater? Are you having a big party? It's going to be a fun day for football fans, that's for sure. Just want to make a couple of points before we get started here about that. If you're in a big room, lots of lights, lots of people, lots of partying going on, you want that TV to be pretty bright. An LCD would generally work better under those conditions than a plasma. But as many of you have heard me say before, I generally prefer plasma, certainly for movies and certainly in a darkened room. So, you know, maybe if you got that big LCD TV at Costco and you watch the game today, take it back tomorrow and get a plasma. Also, I just wanted to let you know a little bit about what I do, since when I'm on Leo's show regularly, and I'm very happy to be, but we don't talk a lot about the websites that I actually write for, that I spend most of my time on. So I wanted to give you just a little bit of background on those and invite you to, stop by, check it out, because I think we do a lot of very interesting things. UltimateAVMag.com is my primary website. It's where I'm the editor and primary contributor. And I like to think of it mostly as being for fun. You know, I profile products with extreme performance, design, and or price. And these products are not for everyone, you know, because not very many of us can afford them. I can't afford them typically. It's sort of like, I liken it to the shows on HGTV and Discovery about, you know, the world's most expensive cars and homes and boats and stuff like that. It's really for the drool factor. It's really for fun. It's really just to get excited about what's possible, what's out there. So I do a lot of those kind of profiles, which I hope you find fun and interesting. I'm also really into education. I've been a teacher from everything from third grade up to university in mathematics and physics, computers and so on. So I like to season my posts with as much education as I can. I'm particularly interested in future technologies and cutting edge technologies. I'm just learning now, for example, about quantum dot illumination for LCD TVs. And I don't have too much to say about it yet because I don't know that much about it yet, but I'm working on it and I'm going to be writing about it because it's way cool. And I'm also very interested in 3D. Now, Leo and I have a lot of discussions about 3D. He thinks it's a gimmick. He says, nah, you know, 3D, bah humbug. I don't. It does have its problems, of course. and its limitations, but I find it very, very interesting. So I tend to write a lot about that. I go to see as many 3D movies as I can. We have some 3D TVs and projectors in our studio now. So we're looking at 3D Blu-rays, which there are a few, and they're growing number. So we're looking at them and evaluating that whole thing. So I write a lot about that on UAV as well. One of the more interesting segments on our website is movie reviews, which are written by David Vaughn. He was my guest here in studio yesterday, and he is a serious movie watcher and movie reviewer, and he writes a lot of movie reviews, typically three a week at least. And one thing I really like about his movie reviews is that he doesn't spend as much time on the movie itself. You can go anywhere on the web and find movie reviews that describe the movie and the actors and the story and how, you know, whether it was good or not. Now, he talks about that some, but he focuses more on the quality of the audio and video on Blu-ray discs. Now, we only review Blu-ray discs. We do not review DVDs because Blu-rays are high def. DVDs are only standard def. And frankly, you know, we want to promote the use of high definition. We want to promote people to see high definition because it looks so much better than standard definition. Now, DVDs are good. And a lot of people say, oh, DVD's good enough, even when they watch it on their high def TV. But I have to tell you, those people who say that have not seen very much real, true high def. So I really recommend it, that you get a Blu-ray player, particularly since they're, you know, down in the $100 to $200 range now. They came down in price really fast. So I really, really strongly encourage you to get a Blu-ray player if you don't already have one. Now, one of the adjuncts to movie reviews that we do is something called Ultimate Demos, which are movie reviews, in a sense, from David Vaughn. But he specifically identifies certain scenes, and he includes the time code. So chapter 5, time code, 53 minutes and 43 seconds. In this scene, we see an exceptional example of detail or inky black levels or surround sound, where the sound flies around the room and so on. So a lot of home theater geeks like me like to demonstrate their home theater, of course. You know, you've spent all this money, you've got surround sound, you got a big screen. You want to demonstrate this to your family and friends when they come over and say, isn't this great? But what do you use? You know, the Blu-rays are generally quite good looking, but some are better than others. So having a resource where you can find the best looking and best sounding Blu-rays, I think is very valuable. So that's a particular feature that I really like, and it's unique to UAV. I don't know any other website that's doing it. So that's something to check out, definitely. I've instituted a relatively new feature, which is a poll question every week, where I ask a question with several. It's a multiple choice question. So there's several answers you could give, and in that case, I'm really looking for your opinion. It's not so much your knowledge about home theater as your opinion. So, for example, this week, my poll question is, how many speakers are too many? You know, surround sound is 5.1 or sometimes 7.1. We're now starting to see Odyssey DSX, Dolby 2Z, ProLogic 2Z can do a 9.1 simulated system. There's no content that's recorded in 9.1. That is nine channels around you and in some cases above you, and then one subwoofer channel. That's what the 0.1 is. At CES this year, we had a bunch of people talking about 11.1 systems. I've heard 22 and I've heard 45. A company called Eosono puts out hundreds. They make a system with hundreds of speakers surrounding you. So my question to you is, how many speakers are too many? You know, of course, there's also the spousal acceptance factor, or SAF, as we call it sometimes, where, you might want to put a bunch of speakers in your room, but your wife or your husband, typically your wife, since most of us geeks are men, are not going to stand for that. So how many speakers are too many? Go to ultimateavmag.com and vote for what you think are too many. There's also a category there called never enough speakers, and that's what I voted for. So that's ultimateavmag.com. I'll be telling you more about some of the other websites as we continue, but next up are some calls from the tech guy. It's the Tech Guy Show with Leo Laporte, except when it's not. Leo's on vacation, actually on a tech cruise with a bunch of luminaries. I'm Scott Wilkinson, the home theater geek, here to answer your home theater questions and talk about all that geeky stuff. Let's start with Scott, in fact, a man after my own heart in Jupiter, Florida. Hey, Scott, welcome to the show.
Thank you. You're doing a great job. I'm enjoying listening to you.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate that.
I wanted to find out what you recommend in plasma that's like less than a thousand. I see some of these on sale for like between the 500 to 700 range.
Mm-hmm.
Do you recommend any particular brand in the lower budget plasmas, or would you veer away from those? Or,
well, you know, there aren't that many plasma companies. There aren't that many companies that are even making plasmas anymore. And I see in my notes here you said 37 to 40 inches.
Yeah, I've been seeing a few of them. And, you know, various places. We were looking at some bedroom.
I can't believe that you've seen plasmas at 37 to 40 inches. As far as I know, 42 is the smallest plasma you can get. I think Panasonic used to make 37-inch plasmas, but I would be surprised if they still are.
Maybe a 42-inch.
If 42 is probably the way to go. It's probably the smallest you can get. If you have some light control in your room and you're sitting reasonably close, 42 inches is a perfectly fine plasma.
You for the best.
I don't know that many companies that are making them anymore. Samsung is, LG is, and Panasonic is. At least those are the majors. Now, you might find some off brands, and I generally do not recommend off brand TVs. Scepter, Insignia. Westinghouse actually makes some very good LCDs. I don't think they make plasmas, though. Generally, I would stay away from anything other than Panasonic, LG, or Samsung. And Panasonic is generally my first recommendation for plasma.
Panasonic, okay.
Exactly.
With the LGs lately for the LCD.
LG LCDs are excellent. The last few we've done in the studio for review have been wonderful. So I can highly recommend those. If you get one of those, and generally with LCDs, I've said it before and I'll say it again, LED illumination is much preferred over fluorescent, what is called CCFL, cold cathode fluorescent. LED illuminated LCDs, whether or not they be edge lit, which the LCD LEDs rather around the edge, or fully backlit, which are much more expensive, generally produce a much better picture than fluorescent backlit LCDs. So that's what I recommend. And if you can find a Panasonic in the $500 to $700 range, I'd say go for it. Absolutely.
Okay. And is there a problem with the burn-ins like there used to be with the plasmas? And do they last longer? Quite often.
Yeah, they last a lot longer than they used to. The burn-in problem is not nearly the problem it used to be in the early days of plasma. A lot of plasmas, most of them, I think, also have what's called a screen wipe function, which you go into the menu and you pick it, and it either displays a full white image on the screen, or it might display like a moving bar that tries to kind of wipe out any image retention. And there's a difference between image retention and burn-in. Image retention is temporary. And it may be there for a little while if you've had the same image up on the screen for a while, or the channel bug, the little bug in the lower corner of the screen. But when you change channels after a while, that typically goes away. Another thing to do to get rid of image retention, which is temporary, is just to display a full screen, high definition signal. That generally gets rid of it. The burn-in really only occurs when you have the same image on the screen for days and weeks at a time. These are in some professional installations when this can become a problem. But I'd say no, it's not really a problem these days for most users.
Okay, well, thank you.
My pleasure. Okay, we got Hubert in Jacksonville, Florida, who has a question that I don't quite understand. Hey, Hubert, how you doing?
I'm pretty good. What I've got is I've got a cable set up, and I've had cable, I've had DirecTV, and I've had all the stuff attached to it. And I got AT&T Universe now, and I'm trying to go without being attached to cable. In other words, I want to connect myself to an antenna, and we're trying to find some way to have digital recording without being attached to cable or phone line. And I was talking to TiVo, and they have to be connected to a modem or to a landline telephone. And I went wireless with everything with Verizon, and I want to eliminate...
Wait a second. You said you had AT&T U-verse?
Yeah.
So that has, I think, as I recall, it has four DVRs in it. You can record up to four different programs at the same time.
Absolutely. What I want to do is I want to eliminate that and go with an antenna over the airwaves and find some way to digitally record that without being attached to a service.
Well, I don't think there's really much of a way to do that. You could probably do that with your computer. There are DVR programs on computers, and I'm not that familiar with them, I'm afraid, that would let you do that recording. However, even those, I bet, need to be connected to the internet, as TiVo does. You could do this with TiVo as well, over the air. That's how I record over the air, is with a TiVo Series 3. TiVo is now up to Series 4. But they have to be connected to either the phone line or the internet or something like that in order to get their electronic program guide, or EPG, which tells the machine, you know, what's going to be on each channel so that you can go in and pick what you want to record, and it knows when to record it. Without some sort of connection to the outside world, it's not going to know that, and so that's going to be more of a problem.
Well, what would be another way to record television shows other than, like, the old VHS system?
Well, on a DVR, you know, that records to hard disk, and you play it back. It's far better than VHS. It's a lot better quality. You can instantly access things and skip over commercials easier.
You have to be attached to an outside source, and I'm trying to eliminate that.
Well, Panasonic for a while sold DVD recorders that recorded onto a format called DVD-RAM, which is different than DVD-R or RW, which is write once or write many times. DVD-RAM was good for as sort of a poor man's DVR. Right. So you could if Panasonic still makes that, and I'm not 100% sure they do, if you go on their website, you'll be able to see if they make a DVD-RAM recorder with an over-the-air tuner built in, which they used to, certainly, then that would be one way to do it. You still have to program it by saying, record on Saturday from 8 to 9 p.m. on this channel. You wouldn't be able to automatically pick a channel
That's absolutely fine. I would like to find a DVR that would do that. I wouldn't have to be reliable on an outside source like TiVo does.
Right. Well, that would be one way to do it. And perhaps the chat room might have some other ideas, too. So I'm going to consult them at the break, which is coming up here pretty soon, to see if they have any other ideas. So stay on listening on your station there, or wherever you're listening in Jacksonville, and try and stay warm. This is Scott Wilkinson, the home theater geek, in for Leo Laporte, the tech guy. We'll be right back. Hey there, Scott Wilkinson here, the home theater geek in for Leo Laporte, the tech guy. The section of the Tech Guy program is brought to you by Carbonite. You gotta back it up if you want to get it back with Carbonite. So, okay, let's see. We had a couple of things in the chat room from the last call, which was that TiVo doesn't really need... You can program things manually with TiVo, yes, but you need to... TiVo needs to know you're connected because they charge you a monthly subscription fee, and that may be why Hubert in Jacksonville didn't want to be connected. Somebody else in the chat room sent me a link to the Toshiba DR570 DVD recorder with built-in tuner. So that would do it too. You would record your programs onto DVD discs. Now, DVD recordable blanks aren't cheap, and they only hold a couple hours more if you record in low quality. And this is only standard definition as well. So it's a partial solution, but it's not entirely the right thing to do. There are a number of things one could do, but really, TiVo is so... I think the issue is one of scheduling. It's so much easier to just point to a program and say, I want to record that, and the machine knows when it is and what channel it is and how long it is, instead of having to do it manually. Now, Hubert was willing to do that manually, and so, you know, hopefully he can find a Panasonic or this Toshiba thing. Somebody else in the chat room suggested the Moxie box, but I think that's only for cable. I don't think that does over the air, and he was interested more in over the air. I'd be curious to know how many over the air high def stations there are in Jacksonville, Florida. Certainly in LA, there are 40 or 50 at least, most of which aren't very interesting, but they're there. Okay, we got David in Dublin, Ohio. Hey, David, welcome to the show.
Well, nice talking to you, Scott. I've listened to your podcast, and I read your question and answer on the home theater website.
Excellent.
And it's very enjoyable. Mine is sort of like just a... I'm very confused about DirecTV and what they've... and their policy. It's my nephew. He had a CRT and when he got DirecTV, so they gave him just a regular standard box with DVR. He was very fortunate to get a very nice Sony about 3 or 4 days ago. It's about 3 years old, but he got a very, very good price. It was a very nice set. So he wanted to upgrade. Well, he called to upgrade to get the HD DVR is $199.
Holy smokes.
Yes, I know. And I have cable. I've got Time Warner cable here in the Columbus, Ohio area. And, you know, they just, if they don't give you a box, which is almost universal, so if you upgrade to HD, you can just use the same box, you can just swap one out. He was very frustrated. He talked to about 8 people at DirecTV.
Mm-hmm.
Got the same answer. I mean, I've even read it on their website. It's in black and white, $199 for HD DVR, and...
Man.
$99 for just a regular HD upgrade. So
now, does your son live in your house? Can he just?
No, it's my nephew, and he has his own
nephew. Yeah,
and no, he has his own house. So what he's done, he's going to just bite the bullet, pay the termination fee, and tomorrow he's switching to Dish Network.
I mean, and I guess Dish Network has a less expensive alternative for him there?
Well, you know, I mean, they'll give him the DVR. I don't know. I think he is paying less, but, you know, he will be delivered an HD box. Now, when he first got the DirecTV, I'm not sure whether or not the HD box was offered. He doesn't remember. But to me, it seems so counterproductive that, you know, when you sign up for a service, you might just have a regular old CRT. Down the road, get a high-def TV. Why... to me, it seems exorbitant amount of money. I don't know why the upgrade wouldn't be for free or at least be nominal, you know?
I agree. It's the same thing as printers and ink. You know, you can get printers for almost free, but then you're buying ink for the life of the printer. Similarly, with a digital box, a satellite box, you know, the box shouldn't cost that much. It's hardware. It's, you know, it's hard disks. My friend I'm staying with here up in Northern California got a terabyte hard disk, you know, for $50 or $60. That shouldn't cost very much. And then they get you with the subscription fee. You know, I don't know.
It seems so that any company, again, I don't know, you know, I don't know what Dish Network does. As I said, no, Time Warner will just, you know, basically, if you can't swap it out yourself and do your own upgrade, they'll come out for a very low amount of money. and, you know, hook it up for you. I can't, I think this is so counterproductive to make it so exorbitant. I mean, he's...
I couldn't agree more. You know, they're shooting themselves in the foot, if you ask me.
Absolutely.
But, you know, it's DirecTV. They have their business model. They're doing what they're doing. I personally have Dish Network as opposed to DirecTV, and I have found it to be wonderful.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
My pleasure. Thanks so much for calling. Okay, we got Mike in Maine. Hey, Mike, how you doing?
I'm doing good. How are you?
I'm doing great, thanks. I hope you're staying warm.
Doing my best, and I got to tell you, listening to you is just super. I'm so glad you're on the air this week because...
Thank you.
Started talking a little bit about my question yesterday, but I was hoping you could follow up.
Sure.
You talked about local dimming in backlit LED televisions.
Mm-hmm.
In the Sony now makes some side-lit LED TVs with local dimming, and I'm wondering how that works, or local dimming, and what that's all about. I'm also curious a little bit. I just took your poll about speakers, and I'm curious about soundbars, which is a compromise.
Yes. Okay. Well, two great questions. I'm not sure that I knew that Sony was making edge-lit, which typically called edge-lit LEDs, with local dimming, what they call local dimming. I know Samsung does this.
Yeah, I know. Sure, as well. It's the NX series.
Okay, all right. That's a Sony series, certainly, and it may very well do that. And I just wasn't aware of it, but I know that Samsung does it, and it's not exactly local dimming. Local dimming with backlit LED, I should say LED backlights, where you have an array of LEDs behind the LCD panel, you can darken and lighten them in independent zones so that a dark part of the image, you dim them and it looks darker. And a bright part of the image, you brighten them and it looks brighter. So it expands the contrast ratio in a very nice way. People are trying to do that with edge-lit LCDs where the LEDs are along the edge of the screen. And as you might imagine, it's much harder to do that way. Samsung does it by, they sort of divide the edges into some number of segments. And if there's a bright area in the upper right portion of the screen, they know to brighten the LEDs in the upper right portion, in the upper right edge of the screen. And they have diffusers behind the LCD panels that diffuse the light into going through the panels and into your eyes. And it works to some degree, but it really doesn't work, in my opinion, very well compared to true local dimming with LED backlights. So the answer is it kind of works, sort of, but not really.
So would one notice a difference between local dimming and in an edge lit and just a high quality edge lit?
You would see some difference. Yeah, you do see something. It does make some improvement, but it's not 100%. It's nowhere near as good as LED backlighting. So that's what I would certainly recommend. Now, tell me again your second question.
The second question was about...
Oh, soundbars.
Which is a compromise in surround.
Yeah, yeah. Actually, soundbars, I've heard some really, really nice ones. And in particular, if they have what's called front-rendered surround, sometimes called simulated surround, where it makes it sound almost like you've got a surround sound system, but really you only have this sound bar in the front. I've heard some pretty effective examples of that from SRS Labs. They build their technology into sound bars from Vizio and others. And that actually is pretty effective, especially in a smaller room. So I would say, you know, like a bedroom TV or something like that, it's going to be a lot better sound than the built-in sound of the TV. So that's really a very good way to do it. Thanks so much for the call. This is Scott Wilkinson, the home theater geek, in for Leo Laporte, the tech guy, back after this. Scott Wilkinson, the home theater geek, in for Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Boy, we're getting a lot of calls here, really interesting ones. Let's get right back to it with Greg in Irvine. How you doing, Greg?
Hi, Scott. I'm doing great. Scott, I'm called Mr. Impatient. I'm 60 years old. I had the first quad player in my
Quadraphonic?
A quadraphonic. I also bought the first Dolby Digital receiver from Pioneer before it even hit the market.
Wow, and you're Mr. Ahead of the Curve there, aren't you?
Yeah, and dummy me, I went out and bought the first Monster Toshiba HD player for $1,400. Little did I know that Toshiba wasn't bright enough to put a player that would play 1080p. All they could play was 1080i, and that's why they lost the war, I feel. And then,
well, yeah, go ahead.
Then I bought the LG combo player for $1,200,
mm-hmm.
and they didn't put true HD sound in that player. So what I'm asking you is, am I missing any information on my 7.1 Denon receiver not having a Blu-ray DVD player that plays true HD?
Well, you are missing something, and there is great debate and personal opinion about how much. Plenty of people I know say standard Dolby Digital, standard DTS, at high bit rates anyway, are perfectly fine. They sound great. And the advantage you get from lossless audio, such as DTS HD Master Audio or Dolby True HD, is minimal. Then there are those who say, oh no, the difference is significant and you really want to have Dolby True HD and or DTS HD Master Audio. It depends in part, in my opinion, on how good your system is to begin with. Now, you have a Denon 7.1 receiver, which is probably pretty good. What are your speakers?
I've got a 2808 Denon. I have ST. Is it HST or HMP or something? I've got seven speakers with the sub. Got a 300.
What's the brand of the speakers?
HMT.
I don't know that brand. That sounds like a model number to me.
No, it's not. It's
a brand I don't know about. Okay, that's fine. There are millions of them.
Yeah. Okay. So it's a match speaker system. And
that's good.
The problem that I have is, well, no, not real problem, but I'm hooked. I have my room set up for 7-channel. Now, the mid speakers in the mid of the room, not all the way in the back for the surround, what information should come out of those speakers, even though there's very little hardware produced in 7.1?
There are very few discs that have 7.1 information on them.
Right. So
there are some that have 7.1 synthesized or expanded from 5.1. I don't remember whether the Denon 2808 has an expansion on it to take 5.1 to 7.1 either. Do you know?
Well, yeah, the 2808 is a 7.1 receiver.
Right, but does it have the audio processing that when it receives a 5.1 signal, will it expand it and fill something into those rear surround speakers?
Well, the side speakers are the ones I'm talking about, and yes.
Oh, those are the five. Those are the part of the 5.1 system. They should have whatever is on the soundtrack of the Blu-ray.
Well, you can hook them up two different ways. You can put them in the middle of the back of the room, corners for the regular surround. But it's not that critical. While I have you on the phone, I sure wish I could talk to you for a longer period of time. Is there any way that I could talk to you during the week?
Well, you can certainly email me, and I answer a lot of emails on the hometheater.com website. My email is scott@twit.tv. At least that's one of them that gets to that location, and it's the easiest one to remember, so that's the one I'll give you. You can certainly write me an email with a question, and I might very well be able to answer it in my Ask Home Theater column on hometheater.com. If I took phone calls from people all the time, I'd never get anything written. So sorry about that. But please do email me, and anyone else who has a question, email me at scott@twit.tv, and I'll be very happy to respond as best I can. So let's see. We got Steve in Granada Hills. Hey, Steve, how you doing?
How you doing?
Great, thanks.
Scott, I just bought a Sony Blu-ray player,
mm-hmm.
and I've not read the instructions yet. I want to use Netflix and, you know, watch, I want to stream movies live. Do I have to connect it with an Ethernet cable, or is there a way to do it wirelessly with my AirPort in my house?
There typically is a way to do it wirelessly. I don't know that in your particular case, some Blu-ray players come with a wireless capability built in. Others allow you to add it later with a dongle. So I don't, you know, you'll have to research that. However, having said that, I will also say that connecting with an Ethernet cable is the best way to go. It's the most reliable. You won't get any interference. You'll get the best possible bandwidth. We have found this with working with Skype on my podcast and my guests, that if they're connected by Wi-Fi to their network, we get a lot more problems, a lot more pixelation and video problems. So we always encourage them to connect with Wi-Fi, with an actual cable, with an Ethernet cable. So if you can, if there's any way to do that, I really recommend that you do.
Yeah, it's just having to run it through the wall and through the ceiling and everything. But
it's a pain, I know. But you're really going to be happier if you do.
Cool. I appreciate the information.
My pleasure. Okay, I think we have a message from Leo, a message in a bottle. Let's hear what he has to say.
Let me talk about the Nod 32 for Windows. I haven't talked about that in a while. ESET is the company. One of the, I would say, the premier antivirus company in the world. Now, you probably know about those other guys because the other guys make the deals and that's what comes on the computer and everything. Get rid of it, please. Get Nod 32. It is, first of all, it won't bog you down. Those other guys have put so much cruft in their software that just slows the thing down to molasses. It doesn't get in your way. It just gets in the virus's way. And that's why I love Nod 32. It detects every kind of beastie. Adware, phishing, scams, keystroke loggers, Trojan horses, worms, viruses, and even the very difficult to find and eliminate rootkit. It's got heuristics that watch your computer, and when virus-like activity happens, they nip it in the bud. It does not slow it down. It's just super effective. In fact, Nod 32 has not missed a virus in the wild, and that's key. There are synthetic antivirus tests, but what you want is an antivirus that won't miss a virus in the wild, a real virus. Hasn't missed a real virus, according to the Virus Bulletin, which does all these tests, so they're independent and very prestigious, in 10 years. That's pretty good. It's been a decade. Not a single in the wild virus. It's also CNET's editor's choice, 5 out of 5 stars. It's just the best. If you use Windows, you need Nod 32. Now, here's two ways you can try it free for 30 days. Go to eset.com/Leo, eset.com/Leo, or call them, 866-935-ESET. If you use Windows, you need Nod 32. It's just that simple.
Hey there, it's Scott Wilkinson here, the home theater geek in for Leo Laporte, the tech guy. The chat room is so helpful here, and Leo talks about it all the time, and I now see why he does, because I've been getting a lot of information about recording programs onto a DVR that may not require subscription or a connection to the internet, as one caller a while ago had mentioned and that he wanted. There's a product called Channel Master. I don't see the model number at the moment, but apparently you can view and record local over-the-air digital broadcasts, records up to 130 hours of standard def content, 30 hours of high-def content, pausing, fast-forward, rewind, all that great DVR stuff, an electronic program guide either with no subscription fee. So that's kind of interesting. We've only got a little bit of time left, so let's quickly take... Oh, I know what it was going to be. Mike from Los Angeles actually... got off the line, but he asked, has one TV in one room and a computer in another room. How do you get the signal from the computer to the TV? Best way to do it is to use what's called an HDMI balun. That is, if you have an HDMI output from your computer, which I hope you do, because that's really the best way to go with TV. So you take your HDMI output from your computer, you plug it into this little gizmo, this little box, and then you can run Ethernet cable for hundreds of feet. When it gets to the other end where the TV is, you plug the Ethernet cable into a similar little box, and then HDMI out to the TV, and that allows you to run HDMI very, very far. There are some systems that do it wirelessly, but as I said on the last call, it's really not the best way to go. This is Scott Wilkinson, the home theater geek, in for Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Well, a good day to you all. This is Scott Wilkinson, the home theater geek, in for Leo Laporte, the tech guy. That guy's happened to be on a cruise right at the moment, so I am honored and privileged to be sitting in for him and answering your calls about home theater. It's a home theater weekend, and what a weekend it is for that, too, given that it's the Super Bowl today. Fortunately, the Super Bowl starts a little later than our show, so you can be listening to me and getting your home theater questions answered before the big game. And I hope if you're planning to watch that your team wins. Personally, I couldn't care less which team wins because I don't follow football or sports of any kind. So it's all the same to me. What I care about is whether or not you're getting a good TV, big screen sports experience. So give me a call at 888-ASK-LEO. That's 888-827-5536. And of course, asking for Leo won't get you anywhere this weekend. You will be asking for me, Scott Wilkinson, the home theater geek. I wanted to give you another little bit of information about the websites that I work for. I spend most of my time on ultimateavmag.com. And as I said before, that is a website devoted to the fun of extreme AV. Sort of like those HGTV TV shows and Discovery Channel, you know, the world's most expensive boats and cars and houses and so on. I profile a lot of really, really high-end stuff there just for fun, because it's so much fun to look at and think about and dream about. Maybe someday I might be able to own such a thing. And I do a bunch of other stuff there. My Home Theater Geeks podcast, by the way, is posted on ultimateavmag.com, as well as on Leo's site, twit.tv/HTG, and on iTunes. And I'm so proud to be able to say that mine is one of 13, I think, podcasts from the Twit Network that received the Best Podcast of 2010 award from iTunes. So yay for us. Yay for all of Twit. We are really knocking them dead here, and I'm very proud to be a part of that. One of the other websites that I work for, the other website that I do most of my work for, is called HomeTheater.com. And whereas Ultimate AV Mag is for fun and education, and I run poll questions, my podcast is there, lots of good stuff there, HomeTheater.com is really more for the shopper. With reviews of TVs, speakers, receivers, Blu-ray players, home theater in a box system, sound bars, online streaming devices, projectors. They also have Blu-ray movie reviews. And but if you're shopping for product that you might actually be able to buy, then you want to go to HomeTheater.com. In addition to the individual reviews, we also have buyer's guides, where the editor and the editors, including me, have put together a list of the products they think are the best in each of those categories. So those are certainly very worth checking out. And another segment of that, another aspect of that website that is there, is my weekly column called Ask Home Theater, where I do much the same that I'm doing right now, except instead of being on the radio, it's online, and it's in text rather than anything else. So all you need to do to hopefully get an answer to your question is to email me at Scott, at twit.tv. And I get, unfortunately, far more emails than I can answer, but I answer as many as I can in the Ask Home Theater column. And hopefully I provide a service there that, is of benefit and help to those who are looking for advice. There are also lots of educational articles and how-to articles on hometheater.com under the umbrella that we call Home Theater University. Now, I don't want you to get scared about that because it's not intimidating. It's not anything to be nervous about. It's just a name that we use to indicate that here's where you can find how to set up your TV, how to set up your speaker system, where to put things, what connections are best, all that sort of stuff. So I sure hope you will check that out as well. Both sites also have blogs from various people about opinions and news items about what's happening and so on. UltimateAVMag.com is online only, whereas HomeTheater.com also has a print magazine available at newsstands everywhere. So in addition to one issue a month of Home Theater magazine, they also put out a number of special interest issues. We had one recently devoted to Avatar, of all things. Well, and who can blame us, really, because that was such a phenomenon. And the whole 3D thing is covered. We covered a lot on both UltimateAVMag.com and HomeTheater.com and in the magazine. So anybody who's interested in home theater, as I am, certainly wants to check those out. I know that I'm more interested in it than Leo is. He's not a real strong 3D proponent, but that's okay. He and I can disagree on that. I do recognize that it has certain problems, in particular, something I call 3D sickness, which many of you out there may very well have experienced if you've gone to see any 3D movies in the theater or you have a 3D TV at home. You get eye fatigue after a while. You might get a headache. You might feel dizzy. Some manufacturers of 3D TVs, particularly Samsung and Sony, have issued warnings in their manuals that say, if you're drunk or if you're pregnant, hopefully not at the same time, or if you're prone to seizures, you probably shouldn't watch 3D TV. Well, I think those disclaimers are there to protect the company's legal butt. And it's not really as big a problem as those warnings make it seem. So you don't want to just get all scared and not watch any 3D because you might have a seizure. Well, you might, but hopefully not. It's very unlikely, I think. One of the polls that I asked on UltimateAVMag.com was, do you suffer from 3D sickness? And the majority of people who answered said no, but a very strong minority of people said yes, either always or under certain conditions. Maybe certain programs made it happen, or maybe they felt it while they were watching these active shutter glasses, which is what you get when you buy a 3D TV for home, as opposed to the passive glasses that you probably get when you go to the movies, out to the commercial cinema and watch 3D there. They use passive glasses there because they're a lot cheaper, and it doesn't matter so much if they get damaged by the little kids who are throwing popcorn around and smearing the lenses. But some people felt it one way, some people felt it the other way. And then there was a fair number of people who said, I've never seen 3D. Now, I recommend that you go see it, you know, at least once. You have to check it out. And, you know, there are a lot of people say, oh, 3D has come and gone so many times. You know, this is going to be another one of those flash in the pans. I don't think so. And I really don't think so because the manufacturers are way behind it. And the studios are way behind it. They really want this to succeed. And I think that the critics who say it's because they can charge more money for the TVs and for the tickets in the theater, they have a point. It's true. And the theaters and the studios and the manufacturers want to offer something new because they want you to buy new stuff. And, you know, that's going to always be the case. So it's going to be one thing or another. And 3D is the thing now. So it's worth looking at. And my friend David Vaughn, who writes our movie reviews and some product reviews for a home theater, was a 3D detractor. He was a skeptic. He didn't like it very much at all until he got it in his house. And when he got it in his house, He got a new projector, the JVC DLA RS40, the low-cost 3D projector from JVC, a great projector. List cost $4,500, which is really not much for a really high-quality projector like that. And he turned around and said now he loves it. So that's what I have to say about that. We'll be back to answer more questions after this. I'm Scott Wilkinson, the home theater guy, in for Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Scott Wilkinson, the home theater geek, in for Leo Laporte, the tech guy. In case you've missed anything, you're driving around and you don't want to write anything down, and you certainly don't if you're driving, you can check out the techguylabs.com website, where James DeRuvo is keeping meticulous show notes. And anything I talk about, anything callers talk about, is certainly going to be found there after the fact. So be sure to visit there if you need a refresher. Okay, let's see who we got on the line. We got Jay in Providence, North Carolina. Hey, Jay, welcome to the show.
Hey, Scott. I've got, I'm looking for something which most people seem to be looking to get rid of. And yes, that is a deep red tint on the television or monitor, as the case may be.
A deep red tint. Why would you want a deep red tint on your monitor?
Well,
or
it's
TV.
That red is least detrimental to eyesight, and that the blue end of the spectrum, the violet end, if you will, is most detrimental. So what I'd actually like to do is reduce the blues and increase the reds, and I've literally tried rose-colored glasses, and it didn't work.
Well, that's one way to do it. Well, let me talk about that a little bit, because this is a very interesting topic. TV shows and movies are created with a certain range of colors. There's a certain red, a certain green, and a certain blue that are combined to create all the colors you see on your TV or monitor. Now, ideally, you want a TV or monitor that reproduces that same red, that same green, and that same blue. Because that way you are seeing the colors that the content creator intended for you to see. Now, this is one thing we test for in TV reviews. We have some relatively expensive measurement equipment that lets us see what is the color of green this TV is producing. What is the color of red? What is the color of blue? We know where they're supposed to be, and then we look and see where they actually are. Typically, the reds are pretty close, might be a little oversaturated. Blues are generally pretty close. Greens are generally not. Greens are generally what are called oversaturated, which means they're too green. Green grass looks kind of limey green or almost fluorescent sometimes in the worst cases, which is why I say that football is a good thing to watch to see if your colors on your TV are natural. And really what I'm looking for in my reviews and when I'm watching TV is a natural color palette. Now, if the colors are wrong, some TVs offer a function called the Color Management System, or CMS, that actually lets you move the color points, lets you change the color of red or green or blue, and also the secondary colors, which are called yellow, cyan, and magenta. So ideally, so that you bring them closer to where they're supposed to be. Now, in your case, you could use a CMS if you have a TV that has one. Not all of them do. You could use that CMS to make the reds redder and the blues less blue. But I sure wouldn't recommend it. I'm not an eye doctor, and I know we sometimes have an eye doctor in the chat room. So maybe if they are here, they could address this and I could pass it along. But I can't imagine that watching a TV making reds redder and blues less blue or less intense would be of any benefit to your eyes, or watching a TV as it is would be a detriment. I can't imagine that. I mean, first of all, there's not a whole heck of a lot of light coming off these TVs. Some of them are. And by the way, I'll mention that if you buy a TV, if you bought a TV this weekend, you brought it home and you pulled it out of the box, turned it on, you're ready to watch the Super Bowl, it's probably in what's called vivid or dynamic picture mode. This is one of the first controls that it's in the picture menu. When you push the menu button on the remote, you'll see these several controls. One of them is probably called mode or picture mode. And it probably says dynamic or vivid, which is the brightest, bluest possible picture you can get. Why? Because that's the way they want it to look on the showroom floor. But I know very few people who live on a showroom floor, and what looks good on the showroom floor does not look good in your home. So go into that TV and select the picture mode that says movie or cinema or something like that, and it's going to be much closer to being an accurate picture, not a cartoony picture. So I have to say, I would not recommend, I don't think there's any real reason to change the colors. You want as accurate a color as you possibly can get. So let's see. We got Joe in Simi Valley, kind of near my house. How you doing, Joe?
Hey, hello, Scott. How are you?
I'm great, thanks.
Anyway, the reason I called, I wanted to get your opinion. I'm thinking about buying this home theater. It's made by LG. Mm-hmm. The model is LHB975. So I wanted your opinion and if you recommend it.
Well, okay, I think what you're talking about is what we generally or generically call a home theater in a box.
Yes.
Which is basically it gives you the receiver and probably a disc player, hopefully a Blu-ray player. I don't know that particular model.
Yes.
And a set of speakers.
It does have the Blu-ray in it.
Good. I always recommend if you're going to get a theater, a home theater in a box, that you get one with a Blu-ray player, not a DVD player. As I was talking about earlier on today's show, we only review Blu-ray movies, not DVD movies, because we want to encourage people to really get the high-definition experience. And so I always recommend getting a Blu-ray player over a DVD player if you have a choice. Now, in terms of this particular LG home theater in a box, I'm sorry, I don't know it.
Mm-hmm.
So I can't say specifically, but LG makes fine product. I would imagine it'd probably be good. Pardon me. My favorite home theater in a box systems come from Onkyo. And the Onkyo home theater in a box systems, interestingly, do not have any disc player. Typically, they only have a receiver and a set of speakers. But the sound quality is generally a notch above most others. And so what you need to do is then you need to buy a separate Blu-ray player and hook it up. It's not quite as seamless and integrated as having a home theater in a box that has a Blu-ray player built into it.
Mm-hmm.
But you're going to get the best sound quality in an Onkyo home theater in a box, and then buy a Panasonic or a Blu-ray player if you're trying to save money, or if you have a little more money to spend, the Oppo BDP 83 or 93. But those are in the $500 range. If you want to be spending more like $100 or $200, I typically recommend Panasonic or Samsung or Sony, for that matter. But the Panasonics generally load pretty fast. And all Blu-ray players, by the way, look really good. I don't think I've ever seen a Blu-ray player that didn't look really good. So the distinguishing factor is how fast do they load the disc. Some of them are very slow. The PS3, by the way, the Sony PS3 gaming system, if you're into gaming, And you want Blu-ray as well, that's the way to go.
Right.
It's a great Blu-ray player, as well as, I guess, a great gaming system. I'm not a gamer by any means whatsoever, but that's what people tell me.
Yeah, neither am I. I'm just looking
for
the picture quality and the sound system. This particular one, they say it's got 1,200 watts.
Yeah, they're all around that, something like that. So, yeah, that sounds pretty good. Scott Wilkinson, the home theater geek, in for Leo Laporte.
Thank you.
It's Scott Wilkinson, the home theater geek, in for Leo Laporte, the tech guy. This portion of the Tech Guy show is brought to you by DSL Extreme, Leo's own internet service provider. For a great DSL experience at an amazing price, it's DSL Extreme. So let's get right back to the phones here. We got a bunch of great calls. Tim in Ohio. How you doing, Tim?
I'm doing pretty good. How are you doing, Scott?
I'm doing great. I'm having a wonderful time, and the weather outside my window is gorgeous. How about you?
Oh, it's about 20 degrees here.
Sorry. So sorry.
It's a great day to be inside. You're doing a
there
great
you
job
go.
Filling in for Leo.
Thank you. Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
I'm watching via the Roku. It looks
excellent.
Good.
Excellent.
My question falls into exactly what you were discussing during the break, actually, digital audio.
Uh-huh.
My question is I kind of went crazy at Christmas on myself. I bought a new...
Hey, you got to do that once in a while, right?
Every once in a while, yeah. So I got a Mitsubishi 60-inch DLP.
Nice.
I got a Pioneer Elite home theater receiver and
excellent.
A Pioneer Elite Blu-ray player.
Uh-huh,
and
very good.
The Roku X DS.
Uh-huh. Oh, good. Excellent.
My question is there any advantage to running the HDMIs through the receiver rather than straight to the TV if I use the digital coaxial audio from the TV to the receiver?
Yes, there definitely is. We were talking about this off the air, as you said, in
right.
the break. And, there is definitely an advantage to running the HDMI through the AV receiver. And the advantage is that with the Blu-ray player in particular, you will get on a Blu-ray disc, there are now these high definition audio formats called Dolby True HD and DTS HD Master Audio. And they are what are called lossless audio formats. So they're compressed, but they don't lose any data like regular Dolby Digital and regular DTS and MP3 even for audio. Those are what are called lossy compression formats, and they throw away a bunch of the audio data in the assumption and the theory that you're not going to hear it anyway, so why do you need to transport it? You can lower the bandwidth requirements by throwing a bunch of that data away, which is good in theory, but you know, those of us who are real geeks, we want all our data. We don't want to lose any of that data. So the only way to get all that lossless audio data from a Blu-ray is either to send it via HDMI to the receiver, or the other way to do it is to, if the Blu-ray player has multiple analog audio outputs, typically 5.1, or in other words, 6 or 8 of them for 7.1, and the receiver has a corresponding number of analog inputs, you can get the high-def audio that way, the lossless audio that way. But that requires 6 or 8 separate cables, which is a bunch of techno spaghetti, in my opinion, plus the fact that running everything through the receiver lets you switch what you want to watch much easier than having to switch the receiver for the audio and the TV for the video. You're not losing anything, typically, with running the HDMI through the receiver in terms of audio. Now, I will tell you this. There are some receivers, the Pioneer is not one of them, you'll be glad to hear, that actually degrade the video to some degree. In particular, it does what's called clipping above white and below black. Now, that's a little geeky. The TV system represents white. It represents the dynamic range from black to white in 8 bits, right? So 8 computer bits, otherwise known as a byte. And black is defined as 16, not 0. And white is defined as 235, not 255, which it would be, which 8 bits can represent. So you don't care if you don't see below black. You do want to see it in order to set up the TV, but you don't need to see it for content. But you do want to see above white, because snow scenes, white shirts, stuff like that often contain information in the area we call above white. So if you're sending HDMI through the receiver and it clips above white, you're missing something on the video side. Now, fortunately, the Pioneer does not do that. And we test for that in all of our receiver reviews on hometheater.com. So you want, if those of you who are shopping for a receiver, you want to go look at those reviews. Look at the section called Video Test Bench, which has a standard form of tests that we do. And one of them is called video clipping. And that's what I'm talking about here. So you want to make sure that the receiver does not do video clipping, that it passes that test. The Pioneer, I'm virtually certain, does. All the Pioneers I've tested do. They pass that above white and below black just fine. So I would say in your case, absolutely pass the HDMI through the receiver.
Okay. I was just...
That was... sorry, we lost him. That was kind of a long-winded answer to that question, but it contained a lot of useful information that I hope you will take to heart. So here's George in my hometown of Burbank, California. Hey, George, how you doing?
I'm doing good. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you.
I've been waiting a long time for this show to talk to you.
Well, glad you made it on. How can I help you?
Well, I'm putting together a new room with a big screen TV, and my kids play a lot of games. And I've noticed on some of the older non-plasma screens, there's a lag between the input of the game so it actually comes on the screen. Now, I'm not talking about, you talk about plasmas having a better picture for sports and such like that, but there's a processing time it takes between when the HDMI signal enters the TV till it comes out and it's displayed on the screen.
Now, have you seen that on a plasma or an LCD?
Well, this is what I'm trying to. I have an LCD and I have it real bad, but it was the first generation of 1080p, so it's rather old. And I know now we're going up to 240 megahertz and
240 hertz.
Yeah, 240 hertz, and we're going up to 600 on the plasmas. But if you're a gamer, and even though the screen response time is fast, but the processing time behind the scenes is slow, you kind of get smoked in the games, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, I do know exactly what you mean.
And I was wondering if you still stand behind the plasmas to fix that, to remedy that problem?
I do.
Or maybe some of the faster 240s?
Well, I do stand behind plasma. I think that the screen response is faster on a plasma regardless of the technology of LCD, so it should work better on games. Now, I have to tell you, I'm not a gamer, so I don't have a lot of direct experience with playing games on either technology. I will say that the 240 hertz and 120 hertz LCDs are certainly better at screen response, but you're right, the lag, the delay between the signal coming into the TV and the actual display of the TV has to do with the video processor, and that could be good or bad on either LCD or plasma. Now, you said one thing that I want to mention real quickly here: 120 hertz, 240 hertz LCDs, 600 hertz plasmas. All I want to say about that is that's being used as marketing hype to say, "Oh, plasma's better at 600 hertz." Well, we're talking apples and oranges there. They're specified in the same way with the same units, that is, frequency hertz. But they really are describing two different things, and it's a little too technical to get into right now, and I don't have very much time until the next break. But I will say, don't be fooled by thinking that 600 hertz is obviously better than 120 or 240.
From what
it's just, they're different things.
Yeah, it still comes out to be closer to like 150, because a quarter of that, the refresh and the way the screen is processed. But yeah, my whole thing is the processor time, because like it's... even though the screen refreshes quickly.
Yep, it's really a problem. Scott Wilkinson here, the home theater geek, in for Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Scott Wilkinson, the home theater geek, in for Leo Laporte, the tech guy. All this weekend, we're talking home theater and having a grand time doing it. Let's see. Coming up next is Don from Arizona. with a question that I don't quite yet understand. I'm sure I will momentarily. Hey, Don, how you doing?
Hey, what's going on, Scott? I got a 2002 Sony KDF70XBR. It's a 70-inch.
Oh, nice TV.
CD TV. Okay, it's an old one, though, 2002. I traded two bicycles for it.
Cool.
Green blob, I got the blue. Okay, so the
You got the blue blob problem. Now, the green blob problem came from Sony rear projection TVs, which they don't make anymore. Here you've got an LCD TV. Describe it a little more more completely for me.
Okay, it's supposed to be an LCD, a rear projection LCD. So project.
Well, probably it might be a it might be an LED backlit. How old is it? I've forgotten now.
It's a 2002.
Yeah, I remember seeing that at the Sony line show. It might have been one of the first LED backlit LCDs.
Right. Now, my problem is I already found an optical block for it, but the does it have an LED panel on it? And if it does, I got blue pixels that are staying on. Could that be from that blue malfunction of the optical block? Will that be fixed when I replace the block?
Oh, you're talking about the circuit board in the TV.
No, okay, let me ask you. The panel itself, is it LCD, what you watch?
Yes, it's certainly LCD, yes.
Okay, now there's a pixel has green, red, blue, and yellow, right?
Only red, green, and blue. Sharp is the only LCD TV that has yellow, what are called sub-pixels. Sony does not have that, so they're only red, green, and blue.
Okay, well, the blue pixels on the on the area of the screen that's got the blue blob looking are staying lit.
Yeah, that's a defect.
Off.
One of the members of the chat room is saying, no 70-inch LCD from 2002. You sure it's a 70-inch LCD?
Yeah, it's a KDF70XBR950.
Huh. It sounds like a defect to me. So you're going to have a tech look at it, I'm afraid. And carting a 70-inch LCD TV into a shop or something, that's not going to be fun.
work out. I'm just thinking, is the blue part of that screen, is that I think that's what's making the blue pixels.
I'm sorry. Tell me that model number again. I'm getting some information in the chat room that might dispute that it's an LCD.
Zero. XB.
I'm sorry. Start again, please.
K as in cat, or K as in kid, D as in dog, F as in Frank, 70, X, B as in boy, R 950.
Okay. KDF is probably a rear projector. How deep is it?
It's only about a foot and a half, maybe.
Okay. So it is a rear projector. It's not an LCD. My mistake. I apologize. It is a rear projector, it's not a blue blob, not a green blob problem. It's a blue blob problem. It still sounds like a defect to me. It's probably LCD rear projection rather than SXRD. Thanks to the chat room for helping me remember all the way back to 2002. that sounds like a defect. Given that it's a rear projector and it's that old, and believe me, that's old these days. I remember when TVs used to last 15, 20, 25 years. They are not designed to do that these days, and I'm sorry to say that, but it's the truth of the matter. It may be that it's given up the ghost. You might be able to get it fixed, but it might be more expensive than it's worth. I would say...
For $300.
Sorry?
Fixed very cheap.
Oh, if you can get it fixed for $300, then yeah, absolutely. I would go for that, especially if the tech can come to your house.
Yeah, he comes to my house.
Okay, great. Well, then it's definitely a defect. I'd say if you have a tech come out and it can get fixed for $300, that's the way to go.
All right. Now, I also bought, can I ask you another question?
Yeah, sure. Go ahead.
I got a Sony. I went out and bought the Sony 7.1 surround sound system. It's the STR DH710.
Mm-hmm.
TV has a DVI input on it. can I get a DVI to HDMI cable that will work with that receiver? And
absolutely. Absolutely no problem at all. You can get a cable that has an HDMI connector on one end and a DVI connector on the other end. They're the same thing. The only difference is that DVI does not carry audio. So you're not going to get audio from your receiver to your TV, but you don't need it anyway. So no problem.
All right. One more question.
Well, I got to. Sure, go ahead.
About the newer stereos that have the high up front speakers, and you said
yes.
For side?
Yep.
I have that feature on the Sony, but nowhere in the manual does it say I can use it for side. Did they just overlook it, or can I just do that?
Is it Dolby ProLogic 2Z?
I don't know. Dolby 2Z.
If it's Dolby ProLogic 2Z, only offers height speakers. Odyssey DSX offers the option of height and or width speakers, which are outside of the main front, right, and left. Okay. So if it's only offering you height, it's probably Dolby ProLogic 2Z, and you don't have the option of doing width speakers.
Okay, I have height front and height back.
Oh, and you can put height rear surrounds in there as well. It'll give you a nice 3D sound field. I'd say go for it if you can, and if your wife will tolerate having all those speakers in the room.
Back.
Sorry?
I can only use one or the other, front or the back on the height.
I'd put them in the front. I think it's more important to have height in the front than in the back.
All right. Thank you, sir.
My pleasure. Thank you so much. Before we go on, we have a message from Leo about Carbonite.
Have you ever left a laptop on a park bench? If you have, and you know what? Something like 300,000 laptops are left behind in airports every year. I mean, it's a huge number. They never returned. People lose their laptops. And think of what's on that laptop, all the precious stuff, your pictures, your financial records, your documents, your data. Or maybe you got a virus or a hard drive crash. I mean, data loss happens. That's why backup's so important. And if you're going to back up, you need to know three things. Actually, three words. Carbonite, online, backup. Carbonite's easy. You can get started right now at carbonite.com. Just use my name, Leo. Carbonite is automatic. Your pictures will be backed up whenever you're online and your other important files. And Carbonite, and this is, I don't talk about this enough, gives you anywhere, anytime access to that data. You don't have to wait till disaster strikes by logging into your Carbonite account or using their free smartphone apps. So get Carbonite today before you need it, because afterwards it's too late. Unlimited backup for your PC or Mac is $55 a year at Carbonite.com. Your 15-day free trial starts at Carbonite.com when you use the offer code Leo if you decide to buy 2 months free. Get back it up to get it back at Carbonite.com. Offer code Leo.
Thank you so much, Leo. It's Scott Wilkinson, the home theater geek, in for Leo Laporte, the tech guy. And got a couple of bunch of interesting questions here. Ralph in Alameda, California, just down the road. Hey, Ralph, how's it going?
Hey, Scott, you ought to be on every week for an hour.
Oh, bless your heart. Thank you so much.
Anyway, I got a real quick question for you. I too have a Kuro. It's not the Elite Kuro.
Good man. Congratulations.
Anyway, I'm getting a new TV for the living room, and I saw on television they were at the CES show in the Panasonic booth, and they showed a 55-inch instead of 54, so they went up an inch, 3
yep.
model, and I just wondered if you saw that and if you knew when they would be out.
Well, that's a good question. I did see it.
Okay.
And Panasonic and Samsung, I believe, both started showing plasmas at sizes, screen sizes, 1 inch larger than they have traditionally been.
Okay.
So that means that their bezels are smaller. They've just started making the glass 1 inch bigger.
And the bezel looked more like a Kuro bezel. It was more square, not the tapered bottom like on most of the Panasonics now have.
Mm-hmm. So I think those Panasonic TVs, the ones that they showed at CES, are great. I would have no trouble recommending them. Not quite yet up to Kuro standards.
Right.
But Panasonic is getting there inch by inch, year by year. So I think it's certainly a good buy. As to when we'll see them, boy, that's a hard one. CES, they show stuff, and then it sometimes doesn't come out till the fall. So
okay, you know, I'll just have
it depends. I don't know. They rarely announce release dates.
And I was also wondering if you saw any, because this is going to be hung on the wall in my living room, and mm-hmm. I wonder if they make a Blu-ray player that mounts vertically on the wall that you could put behind the TV?
Absolutely. Well, behind the TV, I'm not so sure. Samsung makes a couple of Blu-ray players that you can mount on the wall. So they're sort of designer items. Scott Wilkinson here, the home theater geek, in for Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Scott Wilkinson, the home theater geek, in for Leo Laporte, the tech guy, as he enjoys his three-week cruise around South America. He's going to be visiting Antarctica and Machu Picchu. I'm actually quite jealous. It's also summer in the southern hemisphere, so weather should be reasonably good, although I suppose it's always snowing in Antarctica. Anyway, here we are in sunny Northern California and enjoying tremendous weather. Sadly, that is not the case for most of the rest of the country. So my heart goes out to all of you freezing in under 10 feet of snow. Hopefully you are indoors, nice and warm, and getting ready for your big Super Bowl party with your brand new big screen TV that's going to bring you the game in glorious living color. Just wanted to finish up telling you about my various activities. I don't spend much time on the other website that we have, which is called stereophile.com. Those of you who are interested in two-channel audio, and this is a venerable hobby that's been around for a long, long time, we have some excellent reviewers and commentators on stereophile.com. There's even some multi-channel audio discussed there. Calman Rubinson is their multi-channel music guy. And he's actually been a guest on my podcast. And otherwise, they cover two-channel stuff. And boy, they cover it with a vengeance. There's a ton of speakers and preamps and monoblock power amps and CD players. And they're now covering music streaming, digital type stuff. So that all at the very highest quality level. So and they do a lot of record reviews and a lot of blogging. So Stereophile.com is definitely the place to go for all your stereo needs. And then we also have one other website that I'd like to tell you about, HomeTheaterDesignMag.com, in which we focus on installations, home theater installations in particular, with projectors and curtains and theater seating. Some of it is custom installed by professionals. Others are DIY projects, and people send in their photos that they've taken during the process and after the process is over, and we show them all there. So be sure to take a look at that for ideas about how to design the ultimate in home theater decor and equipment. So let's get right back to the phones, and we have Doug in Fremont. Hey, Doug, how you doing?
Hi, Scott. Really looking forward to have you on. I'm glad to talk with you.
Thank you so much. Thanks for calling. How can I help you?
Well, I'm going to pick on probably your education vent that you like, and basically I'd say that I have all my home theater and everything I bought was like in May 2001. Okay. And it's like, now, what do you really need to get a, you know, home theater system? I'll kind of review that. What I have is a cable box, a Yamaha AV receiver, a Sony 55 disc CD deck player, and a Sony DVD CD player. And it's with a Mitsubishi, like 53-inch projection, you know, TV.
Uh-huh.
Ate the cassette deck and the VHS deck.
Yeah, you're about 10 years. You're 10 years on now. Okay.
Gone to some people that, you know, they have a box, they have a DVD Blu-ray player, and their TV, and their DVD DVD plays the CDs, and I'm not sure, maybe it also brings in their stereo AM/FM, you know, sound.
Well, it wouldn't do that, the Blu-ray player, but it would probably, if it's a new one, bring in internet radio and other internet content, so online content. Most Blu-ray players these days will do that, and okay. Most of them have Pandora internet radio, so that's probably what it is.
Okay, so they get that sound and, you know, background music, whatever. So
sure.
So it's kind of saying, okay, now if you come up to 2011 and, you know, what is it you really need is the basics. It's like, you know, what I just said I have, it's like, what would you not need and what would you get? You know, obviously you have the TVs, either, you know, LCDs or, you know, plasma.
What is it, your TV is a high-def TV?
It can play it, yeah, but still it's, on its input. Yeah, it can. It does get a HD, you know, we'll play it when I use it either on the cable or.
Right. I don't know if that TV has HDMI input or not. It might have DVI or it might only have component. Do you know?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it doesn't have, you know, the HDMI,
HDMI. Yeah, probably not.
Yeah.
Well, and, you know, are you looking to replace the entire system all at once or piecemeal?
Well, I can do it piecemeal, but it's kind of getting up. You know, it's always a race between getting what's there, and it's always,
Yeah, I can dig it.
And I think the thing is that I'm not personally impressed to go to the 3D if everyone has to wear glasses or have you. So it can be, you know, it could be.
Doesn't have to be 3D.
Doesn't have to be 3D. It could be either LCD or LED LCD or.
Well, I would say if your TV, if your Mitsubishi Rear Pro can display true high definition, then that might not be the first thing to replace. It sounds to me you don't have a Blu-ray player.
No, I do not.
That would be the first thing I would replace. It sounds like you have a surround sound system. You have a receiver. Now, you probably don't have HDMI anywhere, but as you replace the rest of the sound system and the TV, you'll be able to take advantage of that. With a Blu-ray player, you could take a different output from the Blu-ray player called component, which consists of three jacks, three RCA jacks, and they're color-coded red, green, and blue.
Yeah.
Now, they don't actually carry red, green, and blue. They carry a signal called component, which is a little technical, and I won't go into it right now, but they're color-coded red, green, and blue.
Uh-huh.
And so that's what I would probably do first. If you want to do it piecemeal, get a Blu-ray player, connect it to your receiver with component. Hopefully your receiver is connected to your TV via component as well, the same three kind of cable system. And that would give you high-def disc playback right away, right off the bat. And the Blu-ray player probably also will have these online services, Netflix, YouTube, Pandora, internet radio, and so on, which would allow you to get all of that stuff as well. Now, you'd have to connect the Blu-ray player's audio, in any case, to the receiver separately, because I'm assuming you don't have HDMI, and so you need to get the audio into the receiver as well. And there are two ways to do that. One is, and probably the way you'd go for now, is with either the optical digital audio or the coaxial digital audio output from the Blu-ray player. Now, that will not give you the lossless audio that we were talking about in the last hour, but it would give you the standard Dolby Digital and DTS audio, which for now would be good enough.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And so that's what I would recommend you do first. Then after that, I don't know, it'd be a toss-up for me as to whether or not to replace the sound system or the TV. Again, if your TV is displaying high def already and it looks good with Blu-ray, maybe I'd go with the sound system next. If you can do it all at once, more power to you.
Yeah, because I know I have an Energy sound system, and I've got probably two of the speakers are sort of going, and I've looked at others like,
oh, the energy speakers are excellent. Really, really good. And if they're going out, I'd think about replacing the two that are going bad and keeping the energy speakers and just replacing the receiver and the TV eventually.
Okay.
And I'm always for plasma as over LCD, and so that would be my recommendation there. It's Scott Wilkinson, the home theater geek, in for Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Scott Wilkinson, the home theater geek, in for Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Let's see, we got David in Los Angeles. Hey, David, how you doing?
Hey, how you doing, Scott?
Doing great, thanks.
I'm calling about a DVR system that I bought about 6 months ago that I never hear anything about on the show. It's called Szezmi, S-E-Z-M-I.
Yes.
And it works specifically for broadcast TV. It comes with its own indoor antenna that's amplified, and so it gets the digital, has a built-in digital tuner. It does require a connection to the internet because of two things. One is that you need to get it for the guide,
mm-hmm.
and also they have other things like you can get YouTube programs and other
exactly.
podcasts and that kind of thing.
Yep.
I was looking all over for something that would just be a DVR. I wasn't, you seem to be more sensitive to not being able to just put in a program, which is a big convenience, but since I was
programming the
time on a VCR,
Those of us who grew up with VCRs, you know, it's a pretty common thing to do, so we know how to do that for sure. It's not that I like it, but there it is.
In fact, it has a drawback now is that you can't put in a time. I don't know if...
Really? You can only do it with a program guide?
Yeah. Does TiVo allow a time?
Yeah. TiVo will let you put in a manually time and a date and a channel if you want to do it that way. Yeah, okay. I looked up Szezmi. I haven't seen it. I have not seen one before. I didn't really know about it, but I looked them up on the web at Szezmi.com.
Uh-huh.
And you described it very well. They have what's called an over-the-air ATSC tuner. That stands for Advanced Television Systems Committee, which replaced NTSC, National Television Systems Committee, which was the body that dealt with standard definition. ATSC deals with high definition.
Another committee.
And so you can get that through this box, and you can also get internet TV through this box.
Right, through their to the internet connection.
Right,
they
exactly.
They do have some of their own programming, I guess, they send on the available bandwidth. I don't get any of it, but...
Do you have this box?
I do have that box. I got it, I think, from what I saw on the internet, you can only get it at Best Buy. Must be like for releasing it, and it's got a list of $300, but I got it when they released it for $150, and I just saw on the internet recently, it seems like they were still going back to $150 to try to promote it. Yeah, and it cost...
That could be that it's not selling all that well.
Yeah, it's very possible. It costs $5, well, for you, $4.99 a month.
But you, a special deal, $4.99. I'll have to take a look at it. It's another way to get internet TV, and so I will definitely want to check that out. Thanks for hipping me to it.
The cable, and for $20, by the way, you get a number of low-level cable channels like TNN and MTV.
Yeah. Okay.
Discovery, that kind of thing.
Cool. Thanks a lot for the tip.
Okay. Thank you.
Hey, listen, if you want to call in, we've got a little bit of time left. You can do so at 888-ASK-LEO. That's 888-827-5536. Although, of course, you're asking Scott today. And if you missed anything we talked about during the show so far, you can go to techguylabs.com and look at the show notes for episode 742, I believe this is. Thanks to James DeRuvo for keeping those show notes for us. And thanks also to Luis Oliveira on the board and Jason King for screening the calls. Both and all are doing a fabulous job supporting me in my first weekend in the driver's seat. So let's see. We got Alan in Fountain Valley. Hey, Alan, how you doing?
Hey, Scott, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. Thanks.
Two questions, if you don't mind. Maybe they're both quick ones. First, how do you feel about, in general, buying flat panels from a place like Amazon?
You know, that's a really good question. Because generally speaking, I think it's okay. I get flat panels shipped to me all the time from manufacturers. So they often use trucking companies. I don't know exactly how Amazon would ship a big flat panel. But in general, you know, if it arrives defective, I assume that they have some means of taking care of that. Of course, it does mean that you then have to, you know, pack it back up. Presumably you got it, you unpacked it, you plugged it in, you turned it on, and that takes some oomph. And you find out that it's defective in some way. You have to unplug it, unpack it back up, arrange to get it shipped, have another one shipped to you. That's all a big hassle, which is why I typically would probably buy locally. Now, I'm seeing in the chat room that somebody bought their 52-inch Samsung from Amazon and had a great experience. So, and somebody else, Amazon says that Amazon's return policy is better than brick and mortar. So, you know, it may very well be okay. I have not done that before.
I'm wondering if you bought a name brand like a Panasonic or a Samsung, that they wouldn't point you to a local service place if it went bad.
Well, that's a good question. I honestly don't know whether that would be. Let's see if the chat room has anything to say about it as we move along here. It'll take a little while.
Sure, I'll have to jump in there. Second question, if you don't mind.
Sure.
The Channel Master PVR, DVR, a few minutes ago. Have you folks reviewed it?
I don't think so. I don't recall seeing that in the home theater reviews, hometheater.com reviews. You might go in there just to double check, but I don't think we have. But we've been getting so much interest in it on the show today and in the chat room particularly that it piques my interest, and I want to now take a look at it. So we're going to...
I'm noticing that our local Fry's here in Orange County is selling them, but what's disappointing is that they seem to have an antenna version and also a cable version. It would be
different versions.
If both versions were in the same box,
I couldn't say. I don't know
for them.
Yeah, definitely.
Because what I'm thinking is that I can hang up a simple antenna and without having to pay for anything other than the DVR itself and probably be in pretty good shape if I can get the signal here in Fountain Valley.
Yeah. Do you know if you get a good over the air signal there?
I've tried on a little portable and the answer was no, but I was also using one of those little 6-inch antennas that you set on your desk. So I don't think that was.
Yeah. I have a rooftop antenna on my house, and I really think they work quite a bit better. So I'm going to recommend, if you can, climb up on your roof and put an antenna up there. And you're in Orange County, so you could either point it towards Mount Wilson for LA stations or San Diego even. And if you put it on a rotor, on a motorized rotor, which I actually have, you could point it at either one and get the stations from either direction, which would be really cool.
That would be cool.
Yeah, that's what I'm able to do, and it really works great.
Yeah,
hey,
really.
This is Scott Wilkinson. Sorry, got you off here. It's Scott Wilkinson, the home theater geek, in for Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Scott Wilkinson, the home theater geek, in for Leo Laporte, the tech guy. This portion of the Tech Guy show is brought to you by ESET's Nod 32, the best little antivirus program you never heard of. I know Leo uses it. I certainly would if I was a Windows guy. In any event, it's certainly worth checking out. Nod 32 from ESET. Oh, it is for Macs too. What do you know? I didn't know that. I'll have to... Jammer B is nodding. Yes, yes, it's for Macs too. They just came out with Macs. Well, then I'll have to give it a try. I've always thought, you know, I'm on a Mac. It's not going to be so bad virus-wise, but you never can tell. There are those bad guys out there who might like to target us little minority of Mac people. So maybe I'll just have to try. I'll just have to try that out. Absolutely. Okay, we're sliding into the last half hour of the Tech Guy Show with Leo Laporte, except it's not Leo Laporte. It's me, Scott Wilkinson, the home theater guy. Home Theater Geek, actually, which is the name of my podcast. I hope you all tune in at 1:30 p.m. Pacific time, 4:30 Eastern time, when I record the show on Mondays. And my guest this coming week is tomorrow, actually, Steve Guttenberg, an audiophile journalist with a lot to say about the wacky world of audiophilia. So that'll be really fun. And after the show is recorded, it's quickly posted to iTunes and twit.tv/HTG, and also my own website, ultimateavmag.com. So, yeah, I'm getting a little sad here. It's coming up on the last half hour. Let's see how many calls we can get in. Paul in Northern California. Hey, Paul, how you doing?
Real good. It's a real pleasure talking to you.
Thank you so much.
I have a Sony Bravia rear projection, and it's a beautiful television. It's
You're not having the green blob problem?
No, I don't have a green blob problem.
Excellent.
And I was one of those who always said, oh, this is good enough. I don't need HD.
Oh, ye of little faith.
And I've listened to you and gone, oh, well, you know, it's not that good. I just up.
Well, when you see real HD, when you see those who say, as I've said before, and I'll say it again, those who watch DVD and standard def TV and they go, oh, that's good enough for me. When they see real HD for any significant amount of time, then they go, oh, now I understand.
Oh, it's unbelievable. So now I want to get a Blu-ray player.
Good for you.
From what I understand, if you get a Sony Blu-ray player with your Bravia, according to the manual, there's an advantage to that because the television talks easier to the Blu-ray player. Is that true?
That is true. It doesn't necessarily have to be a Sony player. What they're talking about there is called HDMI CEC, Consumer Electronics Control. And what it is it's a little bit of a language that gets transmitted over HDMI. It's a set of control codes, just like that come out of a IR remote. But instead of being transferred by infrared, as in IR, or even RF, radio frequency, as in some of those remotes, it gets transferred along the HDMI cable. And it lets you do stuff like when you turn on the TV, the Blu-ray player automatically comes on, or vice versa. Or when you turn one of them off, the other one turns off.
Right.
And you can control both of them from the same remote. Now, a lot of companies implement CEC, and theoretically, it should be that if you put a Panasonic Blu-ray player, say, with CEC and a Sony TV with CEC, they should be able to talk to each other. However, of course, there are some implementation differences between the different companies. So to get the maximum amount of compatibility and interoperability, which is what the manufacturers like to say, getting the same brand is a good idea. So I would say yes. And there's certainly nothing wrong with Sony Blu-ray players. They're great Blu-ray players. And so I would say if you want to enjoy the benefits of HDMI CEC, which all the companies have different names for, Easy Sync or Bravia Link or, you know, I don't know what they're called from all the different companies.
Sony called
Bravia Link or something like that. So, get a Sony Blu-ray player and you'll be able to control it from either of the remotes, either the TV remote or the Blu-ray remote. You'll be able to control both devices and they'll sync up and they'll do the right, like, for example, if you start playing a movie on a Blu-ray player, the TV will automatically switch to the input that the Blu-ray player is on, that sort of thing.
Right. Now, one other question I had for you was, should I get one with built-in Wi-Fi? Now, where I'm at, I cannot run a cable to the unit.
Well, you know, if you can't run a cable to the unit, then Wi-Fi is your only option if you want to access online content. And, you know, I know a lot of people who do it, and it works reasonably well. I always recommend running a cable if you can, because it's going to be the most reliable way to do that. But if you simply can't do it, you can't do it. So, you know, I know that Sony makes Blu-ray players with Wi-Fi on them. So I would say go for it. You know, there's no real reason not to. Those Blu-ray players also have an Ethernet port on them. So if you ever were to be able to run a cable, you could do that. But in the meantime, you know, no harm. Go for it.
Okay. Well, thank you very much. Hey, you know what? I'm going to let Leo know he needs to do this at least once a year.
He needs to go on vacation at least once a year.
At least.
Well, all of us do. So I thank you very much for that. I really appreciate it.
One day isn't enough to get a hold of you. I've tried and tried and tried, and it's nice to have you for 2 days.
Oh, bless your soul. Thank you so much.
Okay.
Thank you. Okay. Let's go to Bernie in Colorado. How you doing, Bernie?
Hi, Scott. Love your show.
Thanks.
I have a couple questions, and the first one has to do with a sound bar. I have a constant output level coming out of my TV.
Mm-hmm.
I want to put into the sound bar. I haven't bought one yet. I haven't even looked at them yet, but I'd like to get one. And so I'm wondering, how do you control the volume? Is there a remote control that comes with these sound bars that you can raise and lower the level? Or
yeah, there typically is a remote control that comes with sound bars that you can raise and lower their level.
Okay.
I got an email about this last night, actually, wondering whether or not the optical audio output from the TV going to a sound bar can be controlled. The volume can be controlled from the TV, and the emailer said that it couldn't mute. The TV, you mute the TV, but the sound is still coming out of the optical out.
Mm.
And you couldn't control the volume that way. There may be, I haven't really looked at the audio outputs of TVs very much because that's not how I set them up. I set them up with an external sound system with the audio from the source device going to the external sound system. So that may be the way to do it with the soundbar as well. Although, as I say, the soundbar will have a remote control with a volume and a mute on it for the soundbar, which will work just fine, even if the volume from the digital audio coming from the TV doesn't work. Just it's a fixed level. Some TVs may offer you a variable level on that output, but others may not. I don't think it's very common.
Yeah, well, the TV does not have variable outlet.
All right.
Level.
So on the soundbar, you'll have a volume control.
Okay. Would they also have tone controls?
Yeah, to some degree. Probably a bass and treble.
Okay.
I would assume. Most of them do. Sure.
Okay. Suggestions on which one to get? Which soundbar?
Soundbars, there are plenty of good ones. Vizio makes some excellent ones, interestingly. They're coming to be the consumer electronics company for the masses with all sorts of stuff. Cell phones and tablets and everything, but their soundbars are very good, powered by SRS Labs technology, which I like very much. Polk makes a really good one that doesn't depend on reflections off the walls. Yamaha has made soundbars for a very long time that are very good. So there are quite a few soundbars out there, and they're very good. Check hometheater.com for reviews.
Okay.
This is Scott Wilkinson, the home theater geek, in for Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hey, it's Scott Wilkinson, the home theater geek, in for Leo Laporte, the tech guy. It's our last segment of the weekend, and I'm getting very sad. I've enjoyed this so much. I thank John and Alex here in the studio for helping me out. They've been my arms, many more arms than I can possibly do. Luis Oliveira on the board's been great. Jason King screening your calls. And I've just had a wonderful time, and I thank everyone in the chat room for all your support. It's been just fabulous. I'm going to take another call or two, so let's go to Ted in Ontario, Canada. Hey, Ted.
Hey, Scott. I love the HTG podcast. I've been listening to it for a while.
Thank you so much.
I've been holding off on HDTV because at work, I work for a theater chain, and I deal with Sony 4K units up to 60
very
feet diagonal.
Nice.
So it's like, I can't compare at home with that, so why bother?
No, you sure can't.
But my wife convinced me to finally go out and get a flat-screen TV to replace the rear projection we had. It's a Sony Bravia, an EX710.
And nice one TV.
It's so far has been a great TV. But so far, we're only watching analog cable. Haven't got the digital upgrade yet. But a lot of the shows which are broadcast in a 16:9 letterbox, I figured that if we played with the quote-unquote wide button on the Sony remote, which zooms it out so that theoretically you're cropping off the letterbox top and bottom and fitting the picture to the screen.
That can work, yes.
It should work. But
it should. And have you tried it?
Yeah, but we're noticing that it's cropping on the top and bottom. And it's like, are the broadcasters not actually doing 16:9 with the analog stuff, or is it a
They may not be. With the analog stuff, very often they're now getting quite a bit of content that is in that 16:9 aspect ratio, but they have to fit that within a 4:3 window, which is their broadcast window. So you're getting basically black bars on all four sides of the image, and the image is pretty darn small. So I've run into this problem too, and there's really not too much you can do about it. You can play with that wide control. Other TVs call it a screen size or aspect ratio or aspect or picture size. There are all kinds of different names for it. And you know, you can zoom it out and maybe it'll look right, or maybe there'll be some stuff cropped off. It all depends on what the station is sending you. So I say get that digital upgrade as soon as you can, because you'll really notice a big difference.
Okay. And the other thing that I'm looking at doing is throwing up an antenna to get high def over the air. I'm wondering,
one of my favorite ways to do it.
Well, the thing that I'm wondering is, to keep everything simple for the rest of the family, is there a way to, like it used to be, that you could use a modulator and insert other channels into the cable stream? Is it a case that I'm just going to have to use a good old coax switch, that if you want to watch over the air, you flip it here? If you want to watch cable, you flip it there?
Yeah, that's one way to do it. You could get something like this Channel Master that we've been talking about today, that has both over the air and cable tuners. The problem there is that over-the-air and cable use different types of tuners. Over-the-air uses what's called ATSC tuner, and cable uses what's called QAM, QAM, which is quadrature amplitude multiplexing, I believe is what that stands for.
And I believe in this TV, the tuner does have both.
Ah, well, then, if it has, does it have two RF inputs, two RF jacks that you would screw in a cable to it?
Unfortunately, it only has one.
Only has one, right? Okay. Well, then you might need to get an RF switcher, and then switch back and forth. I've done that before. It's not that bad. It's not great, but it's not that bad.
Now, the switch in the TV on the setup menu when you're first setting it up, this is, are you hooking it up to an antenna or the cable? Something that you would also have to then.
Ooh, that's a good question. Now, it may then, under those conditions, switch to its ATSC or QAM tuner. I can't imagine that the RF input wouldn't have access to both. That's a very good question. I don't know the answer to that.
I figured it was probably more for on the analog side, being that the channel alignment frequency-wise is different for over-the-air as it is on cable.
Well, true. But again, it's also a different means of sending the information over the wire, as it were. So I would say just go do some experimentation.
Okay.
But definitely get an antenna, and a rooftop antenna. We've been talking about antennas some, too. Rooftop antenna is going to do a lot better than any indoor antenna. I've done a lot of work with several different indoor antennas. None of them have worked very good. But I have this, my rooftop antenna works great.
What is the typical range for rooftop
type? Oh, line of sight. But, you know, if you line of sight can be 50 miles.
So I should be able to pick up buffalo across Lake Ontario.
Sure, sure. As long as it's line of sight, you should have no trouble at all.
And I thought that we were done with rotors.
I like my rotor.
A few at garage sales do give me a better picture, because from what I hear, is much better than over cable or satellite.
Yeah, exactly right. Hey, thanks for the call, Ted.
Scott.
Okay, we got a little message in a bottle from Leo Laporte.
I do want to remind you, when you listen to this show, you should be backing up. Of course, I don't have to remind you if you're a Carbonite customer, because you're always backing up. That's why I tell people use Carbonite. Carbonite online backup. Guarantee you sometime in the next few months, maybe the next year, maybe if you're really lucky, the next 3 years, you're going to lose data. Something bad will happen to your computer. A crash, a virus. Maybe you'll drop or lose your laptop. And in an instant, all those precious files, the music, the pictures, the financial records, the email will be gone forever. Unless you have a backup. So before anything happens to you, remember these three words: Carbonite online backup. There are three reasons to get Carbonite right now. It's easy. You can get started right now at carbonite.com with the offer code Leo. It's automatic. Your pictures and the other files on your computer are backed up every time you're online, securely and effectively. And finally, and I really should tell you more about this because I don't mention it enough, Carbonite gives you anytime, anywhere access to your backed up files from any computer, even before disaster strikes. So it's almost like you've got your files available, you know, to you anywhere. They even have free smartphone apps. Try Carbonite right now before you need it, because after you need it, too late. Carbonite.com, offer code Leo for a 2-week trial. If you decide to buy, use my name again, you'll get 2 months additional free. Gotta back it up to get it back, so do it right at Carbonite.
Yeah, that's right. Back it up if you want to get it back with Carbonite. That's for sure. Hey, listen, we're coming up to the last few minutes of the show, and I want to thank you again for your kind attention. Chat room's been great. John and Alex here in the studio have been great. Luis and Jason in L.A. have been great. And James DeRuvo is taking all the show notes, which you can find at techguylabs.com. A couple of final comments here. Of course, I've said already on the show that I'm not a football fan, so I'm not going to be watching the Super Bowl. Well, I'm not going to be watching it anyway because I'm flying home tonight back to lovely Southern California. But if I were, I would be mostly watching for the commercials. They're always so hilarious and really great, and they cost $3 million each for the advertisers to put in the Super Bowl. So don't use that time to go get a beer. Bring a couple of them into the room with you. Sit and watch those commercials, if for no other reason than they are very entertaining. And I understand there's going to be one great one for the Kia Optima. A lot of car ads. Kia Optima, one epic ride with Poseidon, aliens, and ancient Aztecs fighting over this car. That looked pretty funny. A little kid in a Darth Vader costume trying to use the Force. Really awesome. Some of these ads actually get released on YouTube ahead of time, or in some places I'm surprised. Most of the, as I recall, these were all supposed to be very secret until the last moment in the time of the Super Bowl, but they're starting to release them early these days, I guess, to generate some buzz. So that's what I would be looking for if I was there. Once again, my websites are ultimateavmag.com for all of your Lamborghini dreams and caviar wishes, or whatever that was, and hometheater.com for the more accessible product reviews and so on. Also, my podcast, Home Theater Geeks, right here on the Twit Network at twit.tv/HTG, records on Mondays at 1:30 p.m. Pacific Time, 4:30 Eastern Time. And whenever I'm on Leo, I'm on Leo's show regularly Sundays at 11:30 a.m. Pacific Time. Hopefully you can tune in then for my regular guest spots. And hopefully, once again, I will be able to come and sit in the big chair, or rather on the big ball, as it were. if Leo's out of town. Until then, I thank you all so much for listening. This is Scott Wilkinson, the home theater geek, in for Leo Laporte, the tech guy.